I'm Nick Law, and you're listening to the Hop Forward podcast, getting you ahead in the brewing and beer business. With interviews, discussions, stories, and advice from a range of brewers and craft beer professionals, the Hop Forward podcast is here to help you and your beer business hot rocket your way to success. Visit our website at hopforward.beer to find out more. Grab yourself a beer as we crack open another fresh episode of the Hop Forward podcast. It's 2015, and I'm sitting at a long table in the Punch Bowl, a pub on the crest of one of Sheffield's Seven Hills. It's been suggested to me by my employer that I should attend a meeting of the Sheffield Brewers Collaborative to get to know some people. Immediately, I'm feeling intimidated and out of place. As a budding home brewer gone pro, there are people here representing the breweries that I grew up drinking. One of them, a large fella, goes by the name of Big Mick. Big Mick is the brewery manager for the famed Kelham Island Brewery. Kelham Island's Pale Rider and its little sister, Easy Rider, were amongst the first two craft beers, or real ale as it was known back then, that I ever tried. This fruity floral beer with crisp biscuit undertones, the look of brilliant gold and a foamy white head still conjure up memories of more innocent times and jovial afternoons in pubs like the Devonshire Cat, a favourite haunt of mine. But here I am in this strange, unfamiliar pub with all these strange, unfamiliar people, Big Mick being one of them. Somewhere in the course of dialogue, I tentatively dip into the conversation, regaling fermentation stories from my own Emmanuels. Big Mick is staring at me. Out of nowhere, he chimes in, "Why on earth would you want to start a brewery?" The answer? Well, in reality, the actual answer is currently slowly making its way into something I'm calling, "What Would Jesus Brew? Why I Left the Megachurch to Start a Microbrewery." But that's a story for a different day, a lengthy one at that, and definitely not one to launch into with all ears tuned into me in that moment. Whatever answer I fumbled for, Big Mick dryly chuckled and said, "Well, I've got some advice for you. Don't do it." This simple piece of advice is something I've heard countless times over the years, and mostly not even aimed at me. It seems the prospect of pro brewing for many a humble homebrewer is too much to resist. After all, how great would it be to be brewing your own beers whilst kicking back a few, rubbing all those hops, posing for Instagram photos? I mean, how hard can it be? The reality, as no doubt most of you listening to this will know, is far from the idea you probably had when you took your first tentative steps into the confines of commercial brewing. As if learning a whole new set of skills wasn't enough, brewing, business, marketing, sales, maintenance, hospitality, venue management, etc., people who set up breweries now have the added luxury of contending with a wide variety of other issues. Political issues such as reforms to beer taxation, or the UK Prime Minister, who was quoted this week as saying in relation to the benefits of Brexit, "We reformed alcohol duties, meaning this summer you'll be able to get cheaper beer in pubs." Great for anyone who doesn't own an independent brewery. And then there are economic issues, such as the wholesale price of energy or consumer disposable income being at a record low. Market issues, such as global brewers with deep pockets tying up beer lines, driving mass volumes through supermarket where independent breweries can't even begin to compete, squeezing the market share ever more in their favour as they sell slabs and slabs of cheap, tasteless lager. There are social issues such as how we make our spaces and workplaces culturally diverse, inclusive and safe. And then there are sales issues, always sales issues, how to sell craft beer in an already crowded market when the quality, by and large, is far better than it has ever been. It really does beg the question, why would anyone look to start a brewery in 2023? And yet, people still are. Despite the weekly growing list of breweries closing in the United Kingdom, I'm aware of several breweries that are coming online or in the stages of setting up. As an aside, I was speaking to one USA representative who said that US brewers are watching the UK with keen interest. With the volume of brewers in the USA, which is around 9,700, openings and closings have always had more of a stable rate, some close while others open. What's different about the UK is that mostly we've had this upward trajectory for many years since Gordon Brown's reforms to beer duty and introducing SBR, small brewers relief. But now it seems that we're experiencing a market shift and correction. And yet, even with this correction, there is still a thirst for craft beer for the average punter. The difference I am noticing, though, is that these new breweries tend to lean towards being set up by people who already have experience of the craft beer industry. A good example, and they were on my podcast a few months back, would be Great Beyond Brewing Co., based in Hoxton, East London. Nick, Ollie and John come loaded with years of experience from working at 4Pure. Big Trip Brewing in Manchester is another example. Simon, I'm informed, is a great brewer and they've already started to make waves in the UK beer scene. And last, but by no means least, is the example which we're going to look at today, Indie Rabble Brewing Company. Co-owners Naomi and Dave Haywood of Windsor and Maidenhead's multi-award-winning craft beer business, A Hoppy Place, announced the launch of a new brewery in the heart of Windsor a few months back. Working with Alex Rowlands as head brewer, formerly of Windsor and Eton, Thornbridge Brewery and Phantom Brewing Co., and with Alison Steele, who has a background in beverage sales, Dave and Naomi are working on this new and exciting project with a great team in place already in what is quickly becoming known as the West Windsor Beer Mile. Having spent time with Dave and Naomi before on various occasions, I was extremely delighted to hear this news about them setting up their own brewery with Alex and Alison. Going into it with their eyes wide open, they are no strangers to the nuances and complexities of running a beer business in a turbulent market. But as I've always maintained, as long as you've got your head screwed on and you treat it like a business, the only advice you'll ever get from me is this: go for it. And then I think maybe I should take my own advice with Emmanuel's. But like the book I'm writing, that really is a story for another day. For now, let's get into this week's discussion with Dave and Naomi from A Hoppy Place and now Indie Rabble. Not only talking about their new brewery, but also beer, politics, and just about whatever else came to mind on the second day of SIBA BeerX in Liverpool, having spent the previous night celebrating, winning various awards and drinking various Imperial Stouts at Asvex Brewing Company. Before we crack this one open, just a heads up, there is a degree of background noise. I've done my best with the audio wizardry to try and remove unwanted chatter and clutter while trying to maintain natural sounding audio. It's amazing what plugins can do these days. It's by no means perfect, but you can hear what we're saying. So stay tuned and we'll be right back after this short message. If you like the Hot Forward podcast, then follow us on all the socials at Hot Forward Beers. Subscribe to the show and leave us a review on iTunes and Spotify and all of the good podcasting platforms. And visit our website, hotforward.beer, to connect with us and find out how we can help you get ahead in the brewing and beer business with branding, creative media, and business consultancy for breweries, bars, bottle shops, and supply chain businesses. For now, grab a beer and let's crack open today's discussion. I'm at BeerX with Dave and Naomi from A Hoppy Place. So I think, Dave, you've graced the podcast the most out of everyone.
But this is
a world exclusive because Naomi, this is the first time being on the Hot 4 podcast.
Hello.
So welcome. We're going to talk about beer politics today, apparently. So do you want to share what's in your glass this morning?
Oh yeah, it's a very exciting cup of instant one press flat white with milk at about 150 degrees Celsius.
But my insides burn.
After last night, it's potentially good that I'm not allowed to get on the beer quite yet. I think giving my body a few more hours to recover might not be the worst idea.
Yep. Well, we were just saying, Naomi, weren't we, before we hit record, about alcohol-free beer and the lack of...
A bit of a wacky thing for me is I've actually decided to do a year dry. The choice being a bit selfishly, I just want to lose a bit of weight and I'd like to be a bit lighter. But also, I want to, for our business, sort of tap into this 20% of the market that doesn't drink at all, that SIBA has been talking about all weekend. And I do think that we've experimented in our bars now and we've seen a real benefit to having a line, particularly in our Maidenhead site, to alcohol-free beer, particularly with events on Tuesdays and Wednesdays. You want to get more people in, more revenue. And people just don't always want to drink an alcoholic beverage, but they want to be with their friends and in the community in the pub.
I think that cracks it. Just make spaces that everyone can go to. And, you know, the traditional sort of a bit dark pub, it isn't that for a number of reasons, but, you know, as well as maybe some of the locals that are there, some of the attitudes that are there, it's the product that's there. And, you know, it's like, oh, what do you have that's not beer? And someone goes, and gives you the Coke or a tap water. It's not, you're not getting anyone in. That's not an exciting place to go. I agree.
Yeah, I think the thing is as well with those kind of spaces like pubs and bars and so on, you know, you're going for, obviously going more for than just the beverage. Like you say, like, you know, it sucks when everyone else is drinking beers and you can only have a Coke. But there is something about the feel of a pint of beer in your hand and the flavour of a beer. That's, you know, it's not sweet, it's bitter, isn't it? So it's not something you just like smash through with some lemons and icing. And I'm always flabbergasted by the lack of alcohol-free beers on draft lines.
Yeah, Naomi really pushed me on this, so I'll get her to say more, I think. But we decided to trial a permanent alcohol-free line in our Maidenhead bar, and it's been doing really well, especially, surprisingly, because we're close to Maidenhead United Football Club, which is a national conference league club. It's a small club. It tends to be more families than you might expect if you sort of think of much bigger teams. And basically, what we're seeing is a whole bunch of the football blokes in groups will come in and have a pint of alcohol-free lager.
Right.
And it's because maybe they've driven down or maybe they just want to remember the afternoon, but we sort of didn't expect that market to present itself. It just kind of shows that if there's a good option available and there's none of this sort of, oh, what do you mean alcohol-free, sort of negativity or machoism, bravado, anything like that, people will go for it if it's good. And, you know, in the craft sector, there's some absolutely amazing alcohol-free beer there now. And it's a young sector, so it should only improve.
I think we all want to be part of the group. I mean, it's all very well going, right, I'm going to set my boundaries, I'm not going to drink. But if you're with a bunch of friends who want to order something at the bar and you don't want to be that person who says, oh, let me just sneak off to have a look at the alcohol-free section that's on the side as a second thought. Like, we've made sure that that isn't a thing. Like, we now are up in the boards. It's amongst all the others. It's got a lovely drawing that Charlotte's done from our bar as well. And it just looks like it's one of the rest of the other beers. Someone's gone up to the bar, have you got alcohol-free? We have something. They get it in a pint glass and they just feel completely normal. And that's what all people want to do. They want to feel part of the group and not like they're an outlier.
I think it's, you know, to talk about other products as well, it's why you absolutely should have a good cider range, a good spirits and wine range. You should offer teas and coffees. And it shouldn't be, you shouldn't have a barman that sort of looks down upon the person that asks for a wine in a craft beer bar or anything like that, because it's just all degrees of inclusion. And every time you switch off one member of a group of six, there's a chance you lose the whole group of six. So we just have to have a wide range of products for all drinkers and not only beer drinkers.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was going to say also, I do think that it's it is a little bit of a feminist issue too, because it can't change biology. Women get pregnant, women have kids, women want to conceive, and they are making those decisions to not drink because it's advised not to drink while you're pregnant. And if you want to have that, even in places like these sort of SIBA events, I do think that we should have more alcohol-free options, because some people are driving, some people don't want to start drinking at 12. And there are some great alcohol frees on the market out there, and I do think we should be championing those and supporting each other to produce these things, because if you're producing that, you're getting some more market back into your taproom, pub, whatever, and you're also seeing a benefit to diversity. So I think it's a win-win.
Yeah. What was the statistic that just got said from the stage at the AGM? Was it 20% of young people now are teetotal?
I think it's 20% of all people.
Yeah, 20% of all people.
Right, of all people are teetotal. And then if you think of the younger generation, because I've seen statistics that the younger generation now, like Gen Z, is that the name?
I lose track of these things.
Basically, like, so we've got some friends and their daughter, who is 18, I believe, just turned 18-ish. They'll kill me if they hear this. She's probably like, I'm 20 now, whatever. But you know, she's fairly young. Like, she just does not like alcohol. She has no interest in drinking whatsoever, and neither do a lot of her friends. And I think that it's very easy for us in our craft beer bubble to be all like, ooh, Wimpy Stouts, ooh, double IPAs. Well, it's easy for me to be like that, at least. Double IPAs, let's brew a quadruple. Without thinking, well, actually, sooner or later, the older generation are going to probably stop drinking less so for health reasons or whatever as people get older and stuff. Or, you know. And who's going to replace them? If we don't make those spaces, like you say, have those beverages that are inclusive to people that don't want to drink alcohol.
Yeah.
We have to. I think, you know, maybe there's an argument for that's why all the big producers start looking at hard seltzer and stuff like that, and sort of modern day alco pops. It's okay, if beer's not fashionable to these younger people, what can we do to get them in? But I mean, it's really difficult. Clearly, like, people now are being kind of almost parented by Instagram, and image is such a massive factor, and also what people, the perceived personality, you know, the online persona versus the reality of the person face to face, and that life is making us not want to do things like drink or you know, take any drugs or anything bad, because, you know, you'll get told off on the internet, and or you won't look perfect anymore. And
I just think if you take a band like Oasis, they're probably the last great band who had that rock and roll mindset. Like, even today, Liam Gallagher or Noel can come out with any old shit, and there's fucking Liam Noel over there, whatever, say what they say. Everyone's like, yeah, go on. But like, if a band did that now, a young band, they'd be like that.
They'd be gone.
People would be outraged.
They'd be gone.
Yes, cancelled. Is the term, right?
We used it already.
Yeah, we made it. But they would be cancelled. And I guess it's, I said a little bit about this before we went on air, like Guinness 0.0. I know it's like, oh, Guinness,
independent
Diageo,
alcohol free stouts are available.
What was that, sorry?
Independent alcohol free stouts are available.
Well, yeah, absolutely. Their marketing and branding team are evidently experts and have tapped into a huge market and rolled it out really well as a product, you know, put it on draft and so on and so forth, in the way that a lot of independent brewers are just left behind.
Yeah, and I think there is obviously some argument there as well for from a duty perspective, that you can still make a good profit on it. I mean, in our bars, we are selling, I think, like Mashgang cheap lager for about £6.
Just under. It's not cheap when it gets to
us. It's not cheap, but it still sells because people will pay for a good AF beer. And I just think it's a market that I won't bang on enough. I can't bang on enough about how much I think people should be looking into this. I think it's going to keep growing, and we definitely shouldn't ostrich ourselves and stick our heads in the sand about it. I think that sometimes it's a bit of a negative slant when we hear these statistics, but we should be thinking of them as opportunities to tap into, because we are small brewers and bottle shops, and that means we are able to be more agile, and we should be able to get these products better and out there faster than any of the big boys.
I think we don't need to gatekeep on this one, right? Because like the people that aren't drinking, they're not even trying to get through the gate, so we need to be going and trying to fish them in and get them over, you know, get them to our side of the wall, not defend anything here.
I mean, there are lots of other cultures as well that drink super malt and all sorts of big commercial alcohol-free things, and it's part of culture. And it's just something that we're not embracing enough, and I think we do need to do more.
So moving on to the next topic of the day, before we discuss the big news, the other thing that we were discussing that got brought up at the Ciba AGM was about Beerflex. So. Just for any listeners that aren't a part of Ciba and don't know what Beer Flex is, just tell us what Beer Flex is, and then if you can just give an overview of Andy Parker's motion from Elusive.
So Beer Flex in principle is a route to market of Ciba's members into the larger Tide pub estates in the country. So they just announced that they're doing a trial with Marston's, which, you know, I must say is probably a route towards sort of commercial income recovery rather than a new initiative. Mm. They're doing it because they have to, and they have to because they lost DI. And I guess the point of Beer Flex is, at the moment, Ciba is completely reliant on the commission that it takes off of every Beer Flex sale to survive as an organisation. And the problem with that is all of those sales are into managed pub estates that are incredibly price conscious. And it's been argued for a long time that Ciba's kind of, you know, more interested in driving down the price of beer than supporting independent breweries. And I don't think I believe that. I think there's a hell of a lot of good here. But I can see why Andy Parker and the notion that he raised, which was in effect to continue to offer that platform, allow brewers to make their own choices, but to fund the business in other ways so that that platform doesn't need to earn a commission. Because at that point, there's kind of conflict of interests, if you want to argue that, that Ciba has about growing its member breweries, but also holding price down so that pubcos will buy that beer. That conflict goes away. So the motion was to do that. It was to remove commercial interests from Ciba as an organisation, which nearly passed, didn't it? Yeah. But not quite.
Yeah, very close. 2 votes in it, I think.
Yeah.
It's very, very close, wasn't it? I guess the... the issue we've got... I was talking to Russ from Amity about it. And the issue we've got is, like, the thing that needs lobbying against is the beer tie.
Yeah.
He said, like, something like, what, 30,000... pub estates, whatever.
It's 30,000 out of 36,000.
Right. You know, it's an insane amount of beer lines that are tied up with macro brands.
Yeah.
Yes. And actually, this is something that I think that Ciba should really investigate. If Ciba can help to support installation of lines into these free houses that don't have the capital to be able to outright buy their own or get a private installation done.
All the expertise.
Yeah, exactly. A lot of it is gatekept. Sorry. And actually, Dave, you taught yourself how to do the cellaring in for Hobby Place.
Well, you have to, because you can't really get access to the training unless you go to one of the big boys who work with the pubcos.
Yeah.
So it's, you know, it's not even the pub tie that we're worried about here. It's in effect the equipment lock-in in free houses, because there are, you know, thousands of free of tie venues that then agree a multi-year contract with Heineken via InServe or with Coors to install and maintain the fonts and the cellar equipment. So they've got in that way. And I think Naomi raised this idea. We were talking amongst ourselves during the AGM of if Ciba offered an independent cellar install service to those free houses, they pay their monthly cleaning fee or what have you once the equipment's in. It would give those free houses who don't want to learn about the cellaring or you know, won't have the staff, whatever their reasons are, it would give them another option besides just handing over the fonts to Heineken, for example.
Well, a good example on that is there's a wizarding themed cafe that has a lot of Harry Potterfinalia in it,
right.
In Sheffield, called the Steel Cauldron. And I know the owners, Rob and Nikki, and they were talking to me originally about putting my brewery in their cellar and brewing the beer. And I went and had a look, and I was like, who owns these beer lines? And it's like, oh, we don't know. It's all like Amstel and all the rest of it. I was like, I don't think you could just wade in and just start putting independent beer on here.
Yeah, because you're scared about being sued by somebody saying, oh, that's our beer line, you owe us X amount of money,
exactly.
Et cetera, et cetera.
They usually build in, like, you know, if you put a different beer on, you charge us this much a week. You have to pay Heineken 20, 30 quid a line a week, whatever.
Right.
They get you that way.
Like a line corkage.
Corkage.
Yeah, and we know a local free house that has untied cask lines, and that's a lot of them do that. And I think that's why some pubs with terrible macro lager offerings have some fabulous cask, because they've managed to make a deal where they kind of don't care about the cask, because as they said in I think in Pete Brown's chat yesterday, he was talking about the fact that the cask fonts are very low on the bar, and these big, shiny, huge fonts that the macro brands have got out there are catching people's eyes first, so they don't really care. They're kind of like, well, while cask isn't a threat, they're not going
to... They don't know how to sell a lifestyle of, you know, Timmy Taylor landlord in quite the way as they're trying to do with Madry, for example. So it just falls away in the background.
But that, I mean, Madry will take as an example.
Dry hopped Coors, you mean?
Huh?
Dry hopped Coors.
Who said that? But we got an Uber yesterday, and the taxi driver was, I was going to do a Scouser accent. Maybe I will. It was all like, oh, I love Matri Me. It's amazing. You know, it's my favourite beer. You know, and I thought,
that's
man,
dangerous.
Like, you know, and he just looking around to make sure I don't get beaten up or anything. Obviously, you like what you like, but like, this guy, he doesn't know that much about beer, and he was saying he feels alienated on the other hand by beer or wine snobs, as he called them, looking down on him and stuff. And it's just like, you know, if SIBA as an organisation could, like you say, they could educate bar owners about how to either look after cask or about the keg installation stuff you just said, and they could educate consumers as well, not like the consumers in this room that know, you know, preaching to the choir, but who, like this guy in this taxi cab, then surely more of the beer drinking market as a whole are going to broaden their horizons.
Yeah. I think the one thing that I did really like during the AGM earlier was, you know, the talk of the SIBA Independence Assured logo, however they want to represent that. Previously, we were talking about, you know, a little bit of a logo on a can or a bottle cap or what have you. Most punters will never see that, won't care about that. Actually, it's a simple thing, but I really like the idea of just having that on the glass. You know, speak to Festival Glass, Inspiration, whoever, get them to apply that logo for you for free if you're a SIBA member, you know, selling beer in a pub. And I think that's fantastic. So it will just be osmosis, because you just need to get into people's psyche over time, I think, with stuff like this.
Yeah.
A single punch to the face campaign isn't going to have that much result, but years of just seeing this logo, it will.
But imagine if you had a SIBA font in free houses up and down the country, where you could buy off the Beer Flex or an expanded version of Beer Flex and get actually a decent price for your beer, because SIBA would be controlling that at both ends of the market.
Yeah, something people could search for, you know, on a website, on Google Maps, whatever, and go, I'm going to go to my nearest independent pub and just find us that way. It'd be good.
Yeah. So the other big news of the day, whilst we're talking about independent breweries selling to independent pubs, is you guys are setting up a brewery.
We are, along with two other business partners. So basically, we've announced, and we've done it primarily because we've got the marketing reach and what have you, we've announced that Hoppy Place is opening a brewery. The reality is, Naomi and I are designing and helping sell and set up the branding and the platform, what have you, for a brewery that a very good friend of ours is brewing the beer for, who's Alex. He's not up here today, but he's been sort of brewing for 10 years, spent time at Thornbridge, Windsor and Eton. He's a fantastic brewer. And what we've agreed to do together, along with his partner, Ali, who's here somewhere, is give him a platform to brew, really. That's his live stream. And we got involved in it. And what's nice about the story, I think, is we all met in the Hoppy Place Garden in Windsor.
Right. Oh, okay.
So we've not known each other for that long, four-ish years now. And it just came to us as a friendship that was created because of craft beer, really. But also, like, we all love live music. We all love going to gigs, venues, and there's not enough breweries that cater for that market. There's not enough spaces for that kind of crowd. The number of live music spaces is declining year on year on year on year.
Yep.
And we just sort of thought, you know, we can use the platform that we've ended up with as a hobby place to try and create the kind of space that we think's missing. And hopefully I can get some of the beer sold.
Yeah, I mean, for me, because I'm very community-led, the creative aspect of the business, I've always done the marketing and the branding, because my previous life, I was in textile design for the fashion industry. So I worked for big companies, sort of indirectly, like Topshop and ASOS and stuff like that. And I always joke that basically that I moved from one fashion industry to another, because craft beer it's definitely got its specific trends that you can plot, just like you can with whether or not the miniskirt's coming back into fashion, etc.
liquid fashion.
Yeah. But for me, bringing that little bit of flair, a little bit of a bit of feminine touch actually into our business means a lot, because I think I want to help increase that diversity once again. Helped having a woman's voice. The fact that we are, as a business of directors, we're going to have two men, two women. So a nice diverse voice. I want to champion creativity in the local community, and as well as musicians, artists. And I think there's something that has dwindled over the last few years. Yeah. I think arts have definitely suffered over COVID because they haven't been deemed as necessary. But I do think that they are a massive benefit for mental health all round for everybody.
And then, I mean, diversity of beer as well, because like so many of the small craft breweries that are popping up, you go in and it's like, oh, what beers have you got? And it's like six hazy New England pale ales and nothing else. We're not going to brew everything, but my favourite beer style at the moment undoubtedly is a lager. I've kind of gone back to my roots, as it were. Well, that's a very different lager to the kind of stuff I drank when I was about 15 in the pub I shouldn't have been in. They were fine. They were playing poker out the back, so they didn't mind that I was underage. It's American pales, it's lagers, it's stouts, and it's some of the new hazy stuff. Try and do a good blend of well-produced beer and not nothing but hazy boys.
Yeah. So whereabouts is the brewery going to be?
So we're going to be under a train arch right underneath Windsor Central Station.
Oh, wow.
It will be about a 2-minute walk from the train. We are going to be right next to another brewery called Two Flints, which means that we're hoping to forge this West Windsor beer mile.
Yeah,
this is what we're nice. Coining. And that'll include Windsor and Eaton Brewery as well, yeah. And a Hobby Place Windsor, and also the Trooper, which is a great freehold pub in Windsor too.
Yeah, so five independent beer businesses within a 15-minute walk of each
amazing.
Other. And we're going to really try and push that, get people to come to town. I mean, can you name another rural town of sorts? Because it's actually a very small town, Windsor. All right, it's got some famous people living at the top of it, and it draws in a crowd, but it's quite a small place. Another rural town like that that's got three breweries in 5-minute walk.
Yeah.
It doesn't exist, so... We need to make sure that people come to Windsor because of the beer. We're going to do our best to market that and get people into us.
Yeah. What have you learned so far about setting up a brewery?
Primarily, I think the advice is don't do it. unfortunately, we're ignoring that. It's interesting. I think it's a very, very difficult market at the moment. The main reason that I'm somewhat confident that this will work for us is we already have a bit of a route to market because we have two bars. It's a 20 hectolitre brew house. If we only brew once a week, we think we can sell 60-70% of our beer without any wholesale customers, which is a great starting position. So many of the brewers here today are sort of entirely reliant on either wholesale or their tap room. They don't have that pub access, and yeah, it's limited. I think in an ideal world we'd have had three venues before a brewery, not two. I don't want to be the next Scottish brewery, but I'd like to have maybe five-ish outlets in total, something like that, I'd be quite happy with. But an opportunity came along in that arch. There it's getting turned over by the arch co, so if we didn't go now, it would have been another 10 years. And we thought, fuck it, let's give it a go. I don't know, what can I say?
Yeah.
It's not easy to balance the books. It's very expensive. It's hard to get access to money at the moment as well. I don't know yet. I mean, we're not open, right? We're getting the keys in a week. We're committing our 50% deposits for our expensive new brew house the day that we get the keys. Maybe ask me in 6 months how it went, and I'll give some more sage advice. For now, I'm kind of quietly confident, but obviously we're still terrified, the four of us. We've had, and Naomi, you can add to this, we've had meetings sort of about once every 2 months where we've gone into the meeting saying, oh no, it's all gotten worse. We're not going to do this, are we? And then we sit down for an hour, talk it all through. And at the end, we're like, right, let's go. Let's do it.
Yeah, we keep sense checking each other, but I think we're still all playing chicken. I mean, I do think that it's always been our plan. And I think that we're just ploughing on with our plan. And to be honest, we have Ali, who's fantastic operations. And her Excel spreadsheets are absolutely impeccable. Honestly, the best Excel spreadsheets I've ever seen.
Yeah,
that's like Donald Trump now.
They do things for me, those spreadsheets.
Donald Trump, yeah. They're the best Excel spreadsheets you've ever seen. No one makes Excel spreadsheets like Ali makes Excel spreadsheets.
Yeah, that went a bit Texan, I think.
But it does give me huge...
Well, I've gone from Scouse to Texan.
Who else can we upset?
It does give me huge comfort to know that I am surrounded by a bunch, and I say this very lovingly, of nerds and IT folk who can interpret the data and are comfortable with that side of the business, while I get to do what I've always wanted to do, which is sort of be my own boss and be a creative. And I love it. I genuinely love it. I mean, I wouldn't change it for the world. I love what I do. Although I do get very anxious and stressed, I'm sure everybody does.
A bit more sleep would be nice.
Yes, but it does mean I can bring my golden retriever to work, who is the love of my second love of my life. Sorry, Dave. maybe first, actually. Mm. She's called Simco, and
I
love
to say,
her.
Please tell everyone the golden retriever is called.
Oh, and she has an Instagram. It's at Hoppy _ Simco, and you can see lots of cute pictures of her as a puppy as well.
Nice. I mean, do you have the same nervousness that you had when you were first opening a hoppy place?
Interestingly enough, no. It is funny because we are with two people who it's their first business as well, and we keep having to sense check ourselves because we've done this now sort of twice in terms of like launching a business or a second part of the business. So for us, we are a little bit more calm, a little bit more like, okay, this is normal. Like, yeah, okay, we ramp up.
I think I can be a bit of a kind of snowplow in the decision making process at times. I just like slam my way through things. And so a couple of times I said, well, okay, that's great, well done, but could you not have checked this with us first? And like, I have to remember that it's not just me making those operational decisions now. I've got to get Ali on board as well, and I'm learning that lesson.
It is good. It's certainly good for us to sort of work with other people and push ourselves not to be so insular. But I do think that me and Dave are quite a good team in the sense that we challenge each other. We don't just think the same way, and I think that is why we are as successful as we are. We have very different types of brains, and I think that's why the combination works really well for us.
So. Yeah, awesome. Mm. Well, it was amazing to catch up. How can people find out more about Indie Rebel?
So the website's there, but it's quite sparse at the moment. It has our initial press release, but it's indierebel.co.uk. It also links through to our social media channels, which are on everything. It's just Indie Rebel, I think, except for some reason that Naomi's decided we need a TikTok. And
I haven't
actually
started
handle.
The Indie Rebel TikTok.
Oh, no, it's Hoppy that's got one of those, isn't
I did
it?
A Hoppy Place TikTok, and all I found was people getting angry with me about camera, so I kind of stopped doing it.
TikTok's a strange world, isn't it?
I'm not sure why I need to dance to try and sell beer on the internet, so I'm not going
to
try.
You don't need to
isn't
dance,
that, though. That's all TikTok
I think he's
is,
just obsessed with dancing, honestly.
I think it's a Gen Z thing.
I'm on the bad part of TikTok, aren't I?
You know, I think, like, Gen
Secretly,
Z...
Secretly, he just wants to bust out some moves.
Gen Z plumbers will turn up to your house and be all like... For people, obviously, it's not a video. I'm doing a dance right now. And finally, massive kudos on your two awards last night.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, I mean, obviously... if anyone doesn't know this but does follow Nick, I'd be surprised. But Nick, you won an award as well last night.
Yeah.
So very well done.
Thank you.
Long overdue.
I'm sure that by the time this comes out, Indeed. People would have heard it. One of my first thoughts was like, would it be too pretentious if I changed the intro to the award-winning Hot Ball podcast? Sounds like an Oscar or something.
You could do it for at least one.
Yeah, I think I will do.
So yeah, we got two last night, which is remarkable, which was best multiple site independent craft beer retailer and also best independent craft beer retailer web shop, I had a sort of hope, a reasoned hope, that maybe we've done enough to get the multiple this year. I didn't expect for a millisecond we'd also get the online. When Pete read out he's reading out the category nominations for the online after we just won multiple, and halfway through reading out the list of names, he just said, don't get too comfortable. which probably gave the game away to the other finalists. I just ran back up and sort of almost on the edge of tears, really. It does mean an absolutely massive amount.
Yeah, I'm honestly still overwhelmed and sort of still processing it all, to be honest. It means a lot. Our Maidenhead branch just won our little regional pub of the year. And I always say, like,
both Camera and Seba like us.
Both
just living
an
absolute
Seba.
Dream.
Hit the sweet spot.
This is a national award as well, which is like just that little step above. So, but we you know, this is not what everything is about, but it certainly makes the journey a little sweeter.
Awesome. Brill, well, thanks for being on the show and enjoy the rest of Beer X.
Cheers.
Cheers.
Well, it's that time again at the bar for another week of the Hot 4 podcast. Don't forget to subscribe to the show on iTunes, Spotify and all other good platforms. Be sure to visit hotforward.beer to find out how we can help you get ahead in the brewing and beer business. Remember to follow us on social media at Hot Forward Beers, and for another week, cheers.